Everybody, it's about 12:59, and as we approach the top of the hour, I am going to get started with some quick housekeeping for today while we are in Zoom webinar, and then we'll get started with our roundtable. So first off, the training is being recorded and will be offered on demand through Cluin for those not able to join us today. Please use the Q&A box to ask any questions, make comments, or report any technical problems during today's webinar. We will be answering questions as best as we can throughout the webinar, so make sure to just put them in the Q&A pod for our trainers. For those interested in receiving certificates of completion, they will be available upon the completion of the feedback form, which is located on the EDM Cluin training page that brought you here today. I also did put the link in the chat for everybody as well. Once you complete the form and click the box to certify that you participated today, then you will be emailed a certificate. On behalf of the Interstate Technology and Regulatory Council, I'd like to welcome everybody to today's training, ITRC's Environmental Data Management Best Practices. My name is Devin Sechkar. I'm your moderator today from Arlington, Virginia. This training is an introduction to the ITRC online resources on environmental data management produced by ITRC in 2022. Today's training is sponsored by the Interstate Technology and Regulatory Council, or the ITRC, and is hosted by the U.S. EPA Cleanup Information Network, also known as Cluin. Some background on ITRC. We are a program of the Environmental Council of the States. ITRC is a state-led organization composed of members from state agencies, the federal government, private sector, academia, and community stakeholders. ITRC members participate in technical teams, which produce tools, resources, and training courses, such as the one you're participating on today. If you would like to become a part of ITRC, we encourage you to visit our website to learn more. The full ITRC disclaimer is also available on our website. If you plan to use any ITRC materials, we ask that you review that policy in detail and be sure to credit ITRC accordingly. ITRC is partially funded by the U.S. government. ITRC nor the U.S. government warranty the material nor endorse any specific product. On slide four, I have the pleasure of introducing our expert trainers joining us today. All of them served as members on our environmental data management team and have volunteered over the years to support this training. At this point, I am going to pass it off to one of our trainers, Megan Eschbach from ERM, to moderate our roundtable discussion today. Megan, take it away.
Thanks, Devin. Hi, my name is Megan Eschbach, and I'll be helping to moderate today's discussion with our panel of experts. The group here today has several years' experience in the environmental industry. And for more information on each of our panelists, you can visit the roundtable description on the Cluin website. I do want to highlight today that this roundtable discussion is one of three that are offered for the ITRC Environmental Data Management Best Practices team. Recordings of the roundtable discussions can be found on the ITRC website. These roundtables are part of the overall training catalog that also includes a 10-minute overview video, as well as a discussion of traditional ecological knowledge. And we thank everyone for attending today and encourage you to check out those other materials and attend the subsequent two roundtable sessions that are scheduled. All of these training presentations are based on the documents that the team worked on, like Devin said, from 2021 through 2022. All of which can be found on the ITRC website. I encourage everyone to find and bookmark the link and explore the detailed materials found there. What we'll be discussing today is based on those documents and we'll be referring to them often. The documents are very extensive and cover a really broad range of topics. Today, we're going to focus primarily on the data quality documents. This section provides planning, guidance, checklists, and a matrix of data quality dimensions for various types of environmental data. It also includes guidance for reviewing and documenting the quality and usability of a data set, and there's links to helpful state and federal resource documents. Environmental data is frequently used to make really consequential decisions, and it's hard to make good decisions with bad data. So data quality touches on all aspects of environmental data management, And clearly understanding the data quality needs of your project or your program, or even your organization is crucial for making confident environmental decisions. As we're discussing these topics today, as a reminder, please do use the Q&A pod to enter your questions for the panelists. We'll do our best to try to get to all of them today. So, with all of that said, I'll kick us off with our first question, and that is just what do we mean when we're talking about data quality? Shauna, can you kick us off?
So, the documents provided by ITRC can help answer this question at a couple of levels. One level is very general and applies to data quality of any type of data in a variety of circumstances. And then another level is more specific and pertains to environmental data, whether that be chemistry, field observations, geology, biology, etc. There's a lot of guidance documents out there about data quality that don't address the unique challenges of environmental data. And so these documents were really meant to fill that gap.
And let me add that the overall topic of data quality can seem to be so broad and nebulous that it's hard to really get a grip on. So breaking the topic down into several specific aspects of data quality is an effective way to assign concrete and actionable meaning to the term data quality. And so we refer to these aspects as data quality dimensions. These dimensions are data integrity, unambiguity, consistency, completeness, and correctness. And documentation can be considered another data quality dimension that encompasses all of the others. Now, these concepts or dimensions are general enough to apply to almost any type of data or any data set. The specifics of how to evaluate and ensure data quality in each of these dimensions may differ from one data set to another, but for every data set, it's feasible to ask questions like, are these data unambiguous? Or even more generally, what is an acceptable level of ambiguity for this data set? And similar questions can be asked about consistency, completeness, etc. Such questions should be answered in the context of the planned data quality objectives for the program or project or data set.
Yeah, and I would like to add to that, the document on the ITRC website using data quality dimensions to assess and manage data quality has a matrix that's very extensive and has examples of these questions for each data quality dimension and for the different types of data that would be typically handled in an environmental investigation. And there's an example from the matrix on your screen. The full matrix is quite extensive, so this is just a small piece to give you an idea of what it looks like. For example, for sample collection in a project stage, when you've acquired data for a particular activity, the matrix will give you specific things to look at to answer questions like the ones that Dreas mentioned. Here, for example, for the dimensions data integrity, unambiguity, and consistency. And starting here, the dimensions give you kind of a general answer to the question, what does data quality mean for your project? And then as you go through and evaluate, this allows your team to develop specific answers for each program or project data set. So using this document on the website and also this matrix contained in it, it's a really good place to start if you're trying to narrow in on what data quality means for your particular investigation.
That specificity is really helpful in clarifying what data quality is. So that's a great start for us. But how do you go about measuring the quality of your data?
So data quality can be measured using the same data quality dimensions that were just described. The questions, these dimensions, and the questions that are in the matrix are measurable characteristics of data quality. So by considering data quality in terms of these dimensions, quantitative measurement is practical. For example, you might determine that 05 out of 48 measurements of an analyte have no associated sampling information. That's a data integrity measurement. Or you might determine, say, that only 14 out of 15 locations were sampled. That's a completeness measurement.
Yeah, and using that matrix that Jennifer just mentioned just a few minutes ago is a really great tool because it's relating the data quality dimensions to the stages of the project life cycle. So field data collection, laboratory analysis and validation, historical data collection, spatial, others. Each cell in the matrix lists one or more items that should be fulfilled if you're establishing data quality on that dimension in that stage. So, another great piece of information is if that's not fulfilled, that's giving you a measure of incomplete data quality. When we design this, the matrix itself does not really cover every possible scenario or every possible measure of data quality, but it does get you thinking about data quality in terms of these specific dimensions, specifically as they relate to your data quality objectives. And so that will help you to measure attributes of your data quality in your own data set.
So you mentioned that questions around the data quality dimensions should be answered in the context of the data quality objectives. Okay, so how do you determine what your data quality objectives are?
Yeah, so ideally, every project should have some kind of documented data quality objectives. You know, some projects may have very simple data quality objectives. We sometimes call these DQOs, if we're talking in acronyms here. And, you know, so some are very simple, while others might have formal 300 plus page documents. You know, if you've ever seen a quality assurance project plan, aka a QAP, you know, these can really be beasts of documents. But at some level, you can't effectively measure data quality without first having a standard to measure against. You know, most of us aren't out there collecting environmental data for no reason. Usually, we have a regulatory standard we are going to compare our results to. Well, the same thing goes for data quality objectives. You need to clearly define what conditions need to be met to prove that your data meets your quality standards. So, you know, for example, if you want to go out and take field duplicates to measure precision, you know, you should have some kind of target relative percent difference or RPD. Set so you can prove on some level of confidence that, you know, your data is comparable. You know, if you are taking field duplicates without a target RPD, what are you going to do with that data once you have it? You know, you don't want to waste time and money collecting data you aren't going to use for anything. So, you know, we have the data quality overview fact sheet, and that kind of helps you get started with defining those data quality objectives, including some questions to ask yourself about your project before you start. You know, the fact sheet also includes links to some of the state and federal data quality planning documents that you might want to reference. And you can use the data quality dimensions document mentioned earlier to help you kind of define your data quality objectives, like precision that I mentioned earlier.
And realistically, identifying appropriate data quality objectives or DQOs can itself seem to be a challenge. So, an approach that we recommend is to develop those DQOs by considering the data quality dimensions and how they relate to project objectives. The specifics that are listed in the data quality dimensions matrix can be the foundation of DQO questions such as, how complete do I need the data to be? And how correct do I need the data to be? It's important to recognize that there are constraints on time and funding, typically, that may prevent the achievement of the highest level of data quality in every dimension. So the determination of DQOs should also consider such constraints and identify priorities among those data quality dimensions.
So it sounds like the timing of reviewing the data quality dimensions and developing data quality objectives is important. That timing seems critical. You need to do it in advance or during your project. When is the best time to think about evaluating these data quality dimensions when managing environmental data?
Well, the short answer to that is early and often. But more specifically, when thinking about the best time to think about data quality, it helps to look at the figure on the screen. This is from our data quality overview document, and it shows project and data life cycles together, and how information about data quality can be shared between the stages of each. So we see the project life cycle stages, which are on the top of the figure, the stages plan, execute, and close. And then the data life cycle stages also plan and then acquire, process, maintain, publish, share, and retain. And I think the value in having both project and data life cycles on the figure together is that it shows that, during the planning stages, your whole project team, not just the data managers, should be thinking about what quality, data quality is needed for the intended use or uses of your data. In other words, your data quality objectives or DQOs. And I also think it's really important to keep in mind that data quality can mean different things depending on the project and the project goals, and to different people, even working on or using the data for the same project. It's been my experience that at the beginning of a project, if you have all the members of the project team in the room at the same time, you can really get different answers about what the objectives are or why the project is important. Maybe I need a deliverable by a certain date, or I want to understand how well a best management practice is working, or maybe I need specific chemistry information to input to a model. So you may have different ideas from different people on the team. And I did want to mention that for the data life cycle, this is something that will be talked about in more detail. There's another roundtable later in April on data management planning and field sampling, so they will talk in more detail. But having the two life cycles together here, the consistent message for us is that through both life cycles, it is important to always be keeping the end goals in mind and also being aware that every project is unique.
Oh, Cheryl, I think you're on mute. Did you
Sorry.
want to add on? There you
Sorry.
go.
Sorry about that. I moved too quickly. I was just going to say that I agree with what Jen just said. And if we go back to that initial question of when is the best time to start thinking about data quality, the best time is really to start thinking about data quality is in the planning stage. So in our overview document, we look at what are some of those overarching questions to ask your project team so you understand what are the needs of the project and what's the intended use of the data. So who is your audience? And why is the data important? So if we take some example, an example, so a measuring nutrients in a lake, for example, your audience could be a community group. They may be determining whether nutrients exceed safe levels for swimming or some treatment options, or your audience could be a regulatory agency, and then there's going to be some more set criteria, maybe some more predefined chemical parameters or detection limits, various QC elements. Or maybe you have a permit requirement you're trying to meet. But as Shauna mentioned, our overview document provides guidance on identifying data quality objectives. It also provides various links to planning guidance documents and other topics that are going to support your planning for your project. Additionally to that, we have a separate document that will help to guide when you're considering and choosing your analytical laboratory. So this is going to help you guide with considerations for questions to ask upfront so that you're addressing what the needs of your project requirements are when you're choosing your lab.
Thanks, Cheryl. So it's clear that the planning is very important, but Jen, something you said is you should do this early and often. So now that we've completed our planning stages, what should be considered in the other phases of the project or data lifecycle, the execute stage and beyond?
Yeah, so after the planning stage, it's really important to monitor the quality of the data throughout the rest of the project lifecycle. You know, you can have the best data management plan in the world, but if it isn't executed properly, you likely aren't going to end up with the quality data that you need. You know, the project manager oversees the project execution stage, ideally with a good plan for meeting the data quality objectives, but, you know, still things can go wrong. You know, have all of the planned samples been collected? Have the sample chains of custody been completed correctly by field staff? Are they in line with the project requirements? Has field staff collected the appropriate field QC samples? And then, of course, there's the lab analysis. You know, have there been any QC failures, or do the data meet the reporting limits needed? You know, like Cheryl's example earlier of wanting to know if a lake was safe to swim in. If you have reporting limits above your human health criteria because the lab had to dilute your sample for some reason, your data might not be sensitive enough to answer that question anymore. I also think it's really important to keep active communication with your laboratory. I personally try to treat the lab like they're a part of my project team and keep them aware of the requirements and changes to sampling plans and schedules, so they aren't left in the dark trying to guess what the project needs are. You know, ultimately, we are humans performing tasks, and we're usually performing a lot of them when executing any kind of environmental sampling project or investigation. And nobody's perfect. And so we just have to be ready for that imperfection and act as quickly as possible when those issues arise.
And let me just add that, as well as in the planning phase and the execute phase, it's during project closing as well that it's important to continue maintaining data quality by ensuring that project documentation is complete and correct and represents what was set forth in the project requirements. And it's also important that the data quality history over the project lifecycle is known and documented. So going back to the question of when is it best to think about data quality, clearly the plan is important, and the project manager needs to pay attention to data quality throughout the project lifecycle stages to help, you know, ensure the data meet the project objectives. However, data quality issues may arise during the project lifecycle, and how the data are used may change after the project has closed. That's part of the data lifecycle rather than the project lifecycle. And that's why viewing data quality from a data lifecycle perspective is also important. And both planning and documentation are essential to link the project and the data life cycles.
So that leads me to my next question. Because we've defined data quality in the project life cycle, when do you think about it during the data life cycle? Because they're parallel, but they are different.
Yeah, as far as timing, the figure with the life cycles, it shows both of the project and data life cycles happening concurrently. And it's true that planning is important to anticipate data quality needs for both life cycles to the extent possible. But beyond the planning stages, the two life cycles do have distinct stages and different times at which the data quality issues need to be addressed. And to contrast the two life cycles a little bit, and I hope that I saw some questions in the Q&A pod, and so I hope maybe this will address some of those, and you know, please ask more questions if not. But thinking about, you know, the project life cycle, it is typically finite. And the planning focuses really on the intended use or uses of the data for that project. The data lifecycle is typically not finite, and it can continue beyond the project lifecycle. Data that are generated to meet specific project goals, they may then be retained long-term, say as part of a long-term regulatory program like RCRA, I think was mentioned, or in a public database from which users can access data long after the projects are completed. Working for government, we have a real need to consider this, how the public may view or use data that was maybe collected initially for certain uses, but may be used differently in the future. The planning, when you plan for a finite project life cycle, planning for maybe infinite data life cycle, you have considerations that are more broad. For example, considering those longer term program or secondary data quality requirements. But it's tricky also because it can be more detailed as well, considering data integration by data managers, things like sample naming and format conventions. So you kind of have both ends of the spectrum that you need to consider for the data quality life cycle.
Yeah, and to expand on that a little, we can look at the data acquisition and processing stages of the data lifecycle, for example. You might be compiling data from a number of individual projects and various regulatory programs into a single public-facing, let's say, water quality dashboard. We sometimes will refer to this as a secondary use of the data because you're using it in a different way than it was initially collected for. So you might have a scenario where, for one project, there was an equipment failure and not all of your planned samples were collected in the field. You would have a data gap there, and that incompleteness could have potentially serious implications on the project level. But for a secondary use, it's just a piece of information that is not available for compiling. And in that case, the risk could be negligible and it's not as important. So, the bigger risks, I think, on the data life cycle are things like correctness and ambiguity. You might not want to show data that was rejected on a project level for some kind of quality issue. And you also don't want to make incorrect assumptions about ambiguous data, or you might end up comparing data that isn't actually comparable. There is a great case study in our materials about USGS compiling nutrient data from multiple sources and how difficult that was due to ambiguous data. I really encourage everybody to take a look at that case study, but I will give you a little bit of a spoiler here or a teaser that the estimated value loss of unusable data due to a number of data quality issues was in the billions of dollars. And yes, that was billions with a B. Sometimes we might not think certain documentation is necessary on a finite project timeline because we all know what's going on when we're in the weeds of that project, but we really could be severely limiting its secondary use. And at a time when companies and organizations are starting to see data as a monetary asset, you're decreasing the potential value of that data if it only has a one-time use. So there really is a monetary value in looking at data quality on both a project level and beyond the project level.
And that case study is a good example because it illustrates how important it is to understand how project situations affect data and data quality so that they can be addressed as they occur and either corrected or documented appropriately. And I think it's worth putting a lot of emphasis on documentation, because that is the primary link between the project and the longer term data life cycles. Ideally, data quality issues from both the project and data lifecycle perspective would be adequately considered during project planning. But, the times at which they are addressed often are different during the two life cycles. And understanding and evaluating those data quality dimensions can help plan for and mitigate data quality issues that come up at different times. And later, we may be able to give some examples of specific items or issues that typically need to be addressed during both of these life cycle stages.
Thanks for all of that information. Hopefully that addressed the question that was in the Q&A pod. Just a reminder to everyone, please do enter your questions there so we can get to all of them. If anyone has any other questions about the project lifecycle or the data lifecycle, please enter those. So we've talked about planning and measurements of data quality, and something Shauna said jumped out at me, and it sounds like all of this can cost a lot of money. So what is the cost of establishing data quality?
Well, I'll take that. So there is both a cost to establishing data quality as well as not achieving it. It's really beneficial to approach data quality costing with a quality assurance mindset. So you're proactively considering what are the steps needed upfront and during your planning and your budgeting to achieve quality, as opposed to reacting to situations as they occur, because that can be a lot more cost involved there. As we mentioned earlier, you may want to make sure that you always want to make sure that you're assessing and reassessing continually to identify efficiencies, if there's any areas of potential risk, if there are uncertainties, and you're doing this throughout the life of the project and your data. So if we take some example, we could take the example of an analytical program. So there is definitely a cost associated with the analytical program itself, but there's also costs that are associated with not clearly communicating or meeting the data requirements. So have you clearly conveyed what the test methods you need are, or what compounds and detection limits are required? Have you set up the program so that you're obtaining and getting the level of QC and required QC so that later on when you go perform your data validation, you're able to conduct that appropriately in the way you need to? Going back to the nutrients example from earlier, so if you were to just ask the lab, hey, run nitrate, and that's it, there's no more clarity around that. I mean, you could end up with ammonia nitrate, nitrate nitrite, total nitrate, on and on, right? So it's really important that in these types of situations, because that can cause unusable data, which is going to be costly, that we use the clarity and we're really clear in our communications. Things that, when you have usable data, that's going to cause things like resampling costs, reanalysis costs. You could be put in a position where you can't collect a crucial data point. Resource costs as well, and staffing hours or equipment usage, and also costs that sometimes can come along with reputational damage. So understanding in the upfront what the data cost benefits are in the upfront will allow you to identify what are those cost management strategies, so you can arm yourself with the knowledge and the tools to be able to plan for your data quality on your project. As well, it really gives you the ability to anticipate what are the risks and identify what is a contingency plan for those risks so you can mitigate them. And just one more point. There is really a value in being able to speak to these costs, especially during budgeting discussions, because those are timeframes that can sometimes be frustrating or a challenge. But understanding how data quality or a lack thereof really affects the bottom line can go a really long way in supporting your data efforts, and also when you're trying to provide justifications to decision makers.
Thanks for that. So we've focused a lot on planning and quality evaluation, but what about if you're a data collector? And we kind of have a couple of questions around, you know, evaluating data that's collected. We talked earlier about the importance of involving everyone in your planning for data quality considerations. How should field personnel be thinking about data quality?
Yeah, I think, Megan, that's a really good point, that just as part of the whole team, the project team, field personnel should also be thinking about data quality. You know, it's one thing to read and follow standard operating procedures or SOPs. You know, that's definitely the first step, assuming that everything in the SOP is there for a reason. And you may not fully understand the reason, Environmental chemistry is pretty complex. There are a lot of variables to manage. But following the SOPs, it's very important to ensure accuracy and consistency in sampling to the extent possible. And then also communicating and documenting those deviations when the SOP can't be followed, that's also really important because then at the end of the project, those factors will be considered during the usability assessment, which we'll talk about a little bit later in the discussion today. But that's when the data team, decides if the data are still representative of site conditions. So at that point, evaluating the data with respect to the data quality dimensions, using the information from the team as a whole, including the field staff, can be really, really helpful.
Yeah, and I just want to reiterate that point because a lot of times people go into the field and they have a very clear understanding what their task is, but maybe not a clear understanding or a realization of the domino effect that happens later on in the project. So the things that are happening in the upfront really do have an effect later on in ways that maybe they aren't considering. So it's just, again, reiterating why it's really crucial to aligning yourself with what procedures have been planned out ahead of time and doing those good planning procedures upfront.
Yeah, one of the questions in the Q&A pod is how would you evaluate data obtained from two different sampling methods from the same site? And this is kind of speaks to this example of you have to plan, and if you plan and you account for that, then you can have that evaluation included. Does anybody want to elaborate on that anymore? That specific question?
I'll add a little bit, and that gets in part to the question of data usability, which, as Jennifer said, we'll talk about maybe a little bit more in a minute. But there are some questions of consistency or data quality that aren't overtly, obviously right or wrong, and that need to be looked at in the context of, all of the data you have, and in the context of your data usability goals for particular uses. So that's not a firm question or answer to that question, but it's really a pointer to say, look at everything you need the data for, and how that relates to the relevant data quality questions and dimensions.
Thanks, So now I want to get more into the topic of data quality reviews a bit more, and I think this is kind of a good segue here. And there's a couple of questions in the Q&A pod. We tend to hear the term data validation a lot when we're talking about data quality. So let's get a just a generic definition of what is data validation?
Yeah, so Megan, I'm finding that as my career progresses, this concept has actually become more confusing to people. I now work on project teams that are much more diverse expertise-wise. We have programmers and statisticians and chemists and just a whole team of people working on the same project team. And that is absolutely fabulous. I love to see that collaboration, but it can also lead to a lot of confusion when it comes to technical vocabulary. So, data validation really is just a generic concept referring to the process of ensuring accuracy and quality of data. Lots of people are involved in that, especially our junior level staff now that have programming and data science and modeling experience. They have all likely had to perform data validation on some level to support those tasks, but it is very, very important to understand that in the environmental industry, data validation can be more than just a general concept, and it can actually have a regulatory component to it. There's a very defined process, and generally, that data validation is performed by a chemist or a specially trained individual that's familiar with laboratory methodology. There could be different types and different levels of data validation, all of which are typically defined by the regulator. But when you're working in these diverse teams, a project manager can ask the team, has this data been validated? And you can get four people saying yes because they reviewed the data for their purpose, but it's actually not that regulatory data validation you might have been referring to. So that's just something to keep in mind and make sure that, we are training our younger staff to understand the difference between these two types of data validation. Our analytical data quality review fact sheet touches on this concept and it goes into depth on a lot of different validation items. It discusses how validation differs from verification or a usability assessment, like we mentioned. It also goes into data qualifiers, what's the difference between laboratory and validation qualifiers, and provides a bunch of references to state and federal documents that do have this defined data review process specifically for environmental data. And I know I saw a question in the chat that was related to, kind of the labs telling you all this data is fine, you validated it, the validator didn't find anything wrong with the methodology, but you're looking at it and you're comparing it to your historical data and it just doesn't seem to fit. Like, what do you do? And that's kind of where the usability assessment comes in. You look at your whole data set, you look at your project history, you run some statistical models, and you run an outlier test, and you say, oh, this data point is clearly an outlier here. We weren't able to find any kind of explanation for it, but we don't think it's representative of the site. So, there are tools outside of just the data review and applying qualifiers to you have in your arsenal when doing that full assessment, to kind of decide what you're going to do with that data for your particular project.
Thanks. I can see how that can definitely be a source of confusion, the terminology there. And hopefully that answered the question in the Q&A pod. So as a data user, how do you know what data is appropriate to use?
So data usability is a topic that's really closely related to data quality, but it really has a slightly different focus because whereas data quality is generally assessed for a data set in general, data usability is more relevant to specific uses of the data set. For example, data that are suitable for a site assessment may not be adequate for a risk assessment or even vice versa. And because data must be collected and organized and quality assured and before the data can be used, it's common to address questions of data usability after questions of overall data quality. However, all planned data uses should be considered in the planning phase of a project. That's when goals and standards for data quality are established. That is, plan to achieve certain data usability standards and then assess whether those standards were met, whether the data quality meets the standards required for those uses. Again, planning needs to be done from the perspective of both the project lifecycle and the overall data lifecycle, which might include uses that you can anticipate are different from those of the project uses. So, documentation and the application of these standards are ordinarily of most value when assessing whether data are usable for a particular purpose. Those standards should establish what levels of data quality should be achieved for a data set. And again, refer to the different data quality dimensions for guidelines for those standards. And then documentation should affirm the achievement of those standards and describe any deviations from those standards. So assessment and documentation of data quality are therefore essential to evaluating the data usability for any particular purpose. And in fact, let me add that that documentation is only useful if it's accessible. Maybe that can be even incorporated in the database, but it needs to be made available to all potential users so that they can do their own assessment of usability based upon data quality.
Yeah, and I think, understanding data workflows and the status of data, I think, is incredibly important and something that too often gets overlooked. We have systems now where data can be accessible in real time, but just because the data is there doesn't necessarily mean it should be used or it's ready to be used. It usually has to go through some kind of review process. Sometimes that's simple and can take a day. Sometimes it's incredibly complex and it's going to take months before you know what, what you to do with that data or if how you're going to use it. But using data before it's been reviewed and finalized can potentially lead to misinterpretations, which none of us want. So it is totally fine to review preliminary data. You just want to make sure everyone knows if they're looking at that data, if it's draft or final. If you have a dashboard set up with a bunch of data and there's no way for you to tell what data is final or what data is draft, you might be misinterpreting what you're looking at, or you don't know the full picture or the reliability of some of that data. So, having that information available can be really important. And I also think it's worth taking the time to know what those little letter codes are next to your results. I'm talking about data qualifiers. They are there for a reason, they have meaning. And you should use them to your, to understand the quality of your data to make those decisions. Please don't omit them completely, or you will make your chemist really, really sad.
I agree. And if we, this is why data quality is, and we've kind of harped on this a few times, but is a continual process. It's just not enough to plan well for data quality. You also have to continuously assess and reassess your procedures and your project data. So if we go back to earlier when we were talking about that nutrients example, if there had been some checks in place along the way at various stages of the process, some of these inconsistencies could have been caught and rectified early on. And this would have avoided large, significant amounts of unusable data or costs. In both the data and project life cycles, you need to be planning your action, doing your action, checking your action, but then always adapting as well.
This has been great, and we have some more questions in the Q&A pod. Shauna, I'm going to kick this one back over to you. Somebody asked, when reviewing data, you mentioned that the batch may not match historical data and the data is not accepted. Would you then consider additional samples to validate that data is acceptable to assure the baseline level data has not changed, thus validating the usability?
I mean, that's a really hard question to answer on a general level. That is kind of one of those questions you have to sit down and say, how important is this piece of data? Is it worth going out and resampling? If you it I think a part of it has to do with how many pieces of data you have. If you have more than three data points to go off of, and you're fairly confident in that outlier, then maybe you don't need to go back out and sample, or you know that you're going to have another sampling round in a month and you'll see what happens then. Or is it important to go back out immediately? That everything is so kind of conditional on the project and the situation and what you need that, it's really hard to talk in generalities. I can't say that word, but like we can't, it's very hard to kind of say like this is always going to work in every situation. It really depends on how important that piece of data is to the question that you're trying to answer. And, are you going to be getting that data by some other process, or do you need to go out and resample? You might have to do that if that piece of data is really important. So it really depends.
Thanks, Shauna. Another good question in the Q&A pod around this concept of third-party validation. What does the third-party validation do for the confidence if the party collecting the data is the one validating it? And there's just a follow-on comment about the need for separation of the validator from the responsible party. Does anybody want to speak to that? Shauna, go
I
ahead.
Guess I'll answer this again, considering I was a third, you know, that third party validator for a long time. You know, sometimes it's dictated, honestly, by the regulator. So I was doing DoD work, and the Navy in San Diego for certain projects, they literally required a third party data or a third party validator to validate data. So there are situations where that might actually be dictated by a regulator that it has to be a third party. And that is generally to remove conflict of interest. You know, the person reviewing your data is going to be impartial about it, because like we said, if a validator rejects a data point, that could potentially have some big cost implications. So if you're the consultant out there doing the sampling, or you're the company itself, you know, that is doing sampling for a regulatory program, there could sometimes be a conflict of interest there to make that decision of if a data point is usable or not, because you don't want to have to tell your client that you have to go back out and sample. And so it's just a way to try to remove any of that like conflict of interest. I hope that we're all very, you know, we have good morals here and would never compromise in that way, but it just kind of removes that temptation from the procedure. So it's a good, there's good and bad kind of levels to that. A third party validator is going to have a very narrow focus and can focus just usually on like the laboratory and the field collection aspects of it, but they're not going to have that holistic project view, which is why it's also really important to do that usability assessment after the validation, because that's when you bring all of those project level considerations back in that the third party validator might not have had information about. So, you know, these are all pieces that work together. The validation is just a piece of information that you're going to use on your overall project.
Thanks, Shauna. I do want to kind of bring it a little bit higher level now. And there's some more questions in the Q&A pod that hopefully we'll be able to get to. But I want to ask, what if, just generically, what if data quality issues do arise? How should project teams work to resolve those issues?
Yeah, I think that's a very important point that the project team needs to work together. I think we've heard this from many of us today, just the different components. You know, Shauna just mentioned the validator, the laboratory, field staff, because data quality issues can really come up at any stage in the data lifecycle, and it's just important to stay vigilant to maintain data quality to the extent possible, you know, at every stage. And although we've contrasted the two life cycles, you know, and how their stages differ, one thing that the two life cycles have in common is the iterative nature of this. And on our figure, we had sort of the circular arrows showing adaptive management and data quality improvements. For example, adaptive management may be led by the project manager, and data quality improvements may result from input from field staff or data managers. But most important, the team works together to ensure that lessons learned are incorporated to make continual improvements throughout the lifetime of the data. And that it's important to keep flexible in your approach to data quality throughout the life cycles, working with your team to anticipate issues that may arise. It's almost expected that issues will arise. So it's kind of built into these life cycles to communicate and address the data quality issues as they come up. And I'll mention again, with the upcoming roundtable on data management planning and field sampling, I think a point there is that sort of this flexibility is built into the data management planning piece. And so that will be another opportunity, you know, to think more about the teamwork and being flexible with your team to address these issues as they come up.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, since your data needs or your project needs may change, you always want to be looking at refining them throughout your project or throughout the data lifecycle. You know, returning back to those initial planning questions is really important. It's much more beneficial to know as soon as possible if your data quality objectives are not being met so you can make those adjustments. If you're only reviewing data quality at the end of your project or at the end of a collection effort, you might not have time to make the needed adjustments, and that's going to leave you with unusable data that's not going to be able to answer your project objectives. Either it's not going to meet your data quality objectives, or maybe you haven't even been able to collect the right information and evidence to be able to prove that they've been met.
Okay, that's great. Some more questions from the Q&A pod. One about data users. So the question is, how do you ensure that data users actually pull the information from your environmental data management system in which you're documenting the data usability? Darius, did you want to speak to that question?
Yeah, I would like to speak to that. It's a great question. And the answer is really more a matter of process, procedure, project management. And there are, in fact, several ways in which you can try to address an issue like this. First of which is training. Ensure that the people who are going to be, you know, pulling the data actually know how to assess where the data quality indicators are stored and what they mean. The second of which is to have a quality assurance procedure so that when somebody does pull the data, somebody else takes a look at it and ensures that it's done appropriately. And let me note that quality assurance is not always done retrospectively. It can be done prospectively as well by developing something like a data analysis plan that says, these are the data I'm going to use. These are how I'm going to get them. These are the quality indicators that I'm going to use. And finally, another way to do it is to have a data facilitator who helps guide data users in their selection and use of the data. And, you know, whether that works in your organization really depends upon how your organization is structured. Something like a data facilitator can be seen as, you know, a gatekeeper. So it's important for such a person to be well integrated, not only being fully knowledgeable about the data, but integrated into the project activities and the data uses as well. Ideally, it's a data, the facilitator is really a data user who kind of likes to get into the data details and the database stuff too, maybe.
Yeah, there's also some, Megan.
Go ahead, Sean.
You know, it is important, I think, to also think about if you can put some controls, you know, on what and how somebody is pulling that data. You know, if somebody's pulling out a query out of a database to use it for certain reasons, you know, you could make sure that they are set up with a query that is, you know, that is developed correctly and is pulling the right thing. And, you know, you can manage that data in a way to prevent inadvertent, I think, data pulls. You know, make sure that you have pieces of information and flags on that data, and you can control what is being pulled by making sure your queries kind of take those fields into account, and that, you know, by setting up basically reports for people to ensure that they're pulling what they should be pulling and not just building something from scratch and not taking these things into consideration when they should be. So, you know, that's kind of one of those tools that a data manager would have, is to set somebody up, like ask them what their specific use is for, like, how are you going to use this? How are you going to display it? And then make sure that you build them a data pull or query that, you know, will ensure that they're not pulling rejected data or something that they shouldn't be looking at. Or you explain to them, hey, this is the result, but make sure you're including these codes and this is what they mean. It's just a lot of communication and making sure everybody is on the same team and understands what they should be using and what they shouldn't.
Yeah, I think
real quick. Sorry,
Yeah,
Megan.
sure. Go ahead, Tara.
We
Go ahead.
keep doing that too. I was just going to jump in just really quick just to say, you know, the question when I first read it, I was like, oh, you know, but it's a quick little question that has such you know what I'm trying to say.
Implications,
Thank
yep.
you. Such implications, you know, because in, you know, we all work in such a variety of ways. Like sometimes there's a very structured database. Sometimes there's a very structured QMS system. Sometimes there's not. Sometimes it's a little bit more loosey-goosey, right? So having that initial planning and structure around your project, around the activities and how things should function is just so important. And going back to what Drea said, training, you know, a lot of times it does come down to, is everybody on board with what actually the procedures are and what is allowable and what isn't? And is somebody checking up behind it? So I know I'm kind of reiterating what these guys said, but I just think it's super important.
Yeah, I was gonna refer people to the one of the other roundtables. I think it's the next one on planning and field data collection. One component that we'll touch on in that roundtable is about just data access and users and user personas and ensuring people have the right tools and the right access to be able to report out on the data. So I highly recommend people join that roundtable, and we'll touch on this topic a bit more. Another question in the Q&A pod is also about sort of reporting on data. Somebody asked about recommendations on handling qualifiers when presenting data in graphical form. Brian, do you want to kind of speak to that a bit?
Yeah, and the question really kind of specifically talks in, for example, line graphs or trends over time, and how to basically show how can you convey these concepts of data quality and what the issues that may be underlying that data in a graphical format. And it's a fantastic question, and it's one that I think that well, a lot of folks probably on this the panelists on this call have some opinions about, but I did want to just state kind of for the record that in our documents, we touched on this a little bit in our data communications section, but we didn't cover this in depth because we kind of, you know, just to kind of take a peek behind the curtain, we didn't, when we first started this, we kind of had, you know, we knew how much of a bite of the apple that we could take when we were doing these documents. So we really tried to focus on the fundamentals. But with that, I will kind of plug just the fact that, you know, that data visualization is a big topic in our industry, and it's one that I think that a lot of folks who are interested in data management are clearly interested in because data management feeds good data management feeds good data visualization and good understanding of that data. And so, you know, this kind of a question, if this is something that tickles your fancy and, you know, you want to pursue it, there, this is again, kind of to abuse the metaphor, take another bite of the apple from ITRC and potentially have a follow-on group that really takes what we did in these documents for environmental data management and talks about data visualization and data analysis, further on data analysis, things like that for environmental work. I think it's a great idea. So if folks are interested in that, please definitely reach out to either ITRC or, you know, I believe they'll have our email addresses towards the end of this. Reach out to us. We'd definitely be interested and see if we get the band back together.
Thanks, Brian. So another question in the Q&A pod. Should the form of data uploads be related to the quality management system? Should we record possible errors in a tool so that they can be avoided? I think that's a great question. Cheryl,
That
did you
is a
want to
great
speak to that?
question. Yeah, I'll just start it out at least. You know, I think ultimately, you know, your quality management system should be able to handle the upfront overarching pieces that have to be addressed, right? But maybe not always getting into the nitty-gritty of it all, but the planning and the important piece, the overarching important pieces. But they should definitely, I think definitely you're going to want to have tools that are created in conjunction with that are going to be able to get people to those places that are a little bit more in depth, specifically if you're talking about individual, you know, possible errors and things like that. So you want it the overarching, you know, plan, do, check, act, on your procedures, on your planning, on all that functional area, but then those details to maybe be tools that can go along with it so people can follow your QMS and be able to get to where training may relate to it or where tools may relate to getting those types of answers.
And I'll just add something in sort of my short answer to the question of should we record possible errors? Yes, of course you should. And the severity of those errors really depends on how you deal with them. Severe data integrity errors mean that maybe you don't use those data at all, but you just can't. You can't make the chemical data associated with any sample. It's pretty useless then. But some errors are more amenable to rectification in some way. And you, or the whatever role you're playing, the project staff, from data managers to project managers, may look at some of these data quality issues and say, we don't really know the answer to this, but we're going to make this assumption. Okay. And we're going to go forward and use the data given that assumption. And absolutely, of course, that should be documented. You haven't necessarily corrected the error, but you're operating under known conditions and known assumptions. And it's really, really critical that those are documented and that documentation is made available to all data users.
I think this is a good segue into the next questions that's in the Q&A pod. Obtaining high quality data requires a lot of planning from the outset. So we've established that. However, is it possible to salvage data quality by initiating the approach at different stages of the project or data lifecycle? I think that's a really interesting question. You know, there's a whole spectrum of the project, the data lifecycle. Can you sort of insert quality in the middle of that? Or is it more important to have consistency throughout the entire lifecycle to achieve expected quality? Does anybody want to speak to that? Can you jump in the middle?
Yeah, I would like to address this question. I do think it's a really interesting question and kind of resonated with me because we have a lot of data sets that, you know, may not have undergone this sort of rigorous systematic planning process in the beginning. So we're sort of retro evaluating the data and figuring out how to do that. So, I mean, the data are what they are. So you can't necessarily, you know, create a new use for the data, you know, or fulfill, you know, a certain use that was intended at the beginning. But I think that this is where I found it really useful to look at the data quality dimensions and kind of think about for your data set, you know, which of those dimensions can you say something about the data quality of that data set? And again, it may not be, you know, ideal or what you would have fully intended if you'd done better planning in the beginning. But I do think there is a lot of value in considering, you know, for those data quality dimensions, for your data set, you know, what can you say about the quality? And then again, as we've said, you know, you need to carefully consider that then when you communicate the data, you know, your end result and reporting, that, you know, you communicate to the end user of the data, you know, what those limitations may be. You know, so I do think there's value. You can say something about the quality of the data. It may not be the broad range of what you had ideally planned, but I do think there's value in that. And using the data quality dimensions, I think, is a good place to start.
Let me just add briefly that, yeah, I agree with everything that Jennifer said. And so it is often possible to salvage data quality, but you should ask yourself whether it's worth it. Mm-hmm. The case study example where it required $1 billion of value that were lost, that's not a unique example. I've seen a case where a data set was collected over several years, and then finally somebody decided to merge all of those years of data together, and the cost of merging the data and resolving data quality issues was about five times the cost of collecting the data. So is it worth it? That's a question to ask.
Uh, All of this has been great. If there are any other questions from the audience for our panelists, please do type them into the Q&A pod. If there's not any other questions, I think maybe I'll wrap it up with our last question today. Just why do you recommend the ITRC documents? They've been out for a while now and available for people to use. So why do you recommend them to people, or what's your key takeaway that you want people to take away from the documents if they go and read through them, for people to know and use for their projects? Jen, can we start with you?
I know it's hard to pick a key, because I think all these documents are excellent, and I've in fact used them in the last year or two since they've been published on the ITRC website, so they're great. But I am partial to the planning, and the data quality objectives process. Just going back to the idea that, different people in the room may have different ideas about what data quality means for that project. And I recently worked on a project with field biologists, fish biologists, and we were working on an environmental DNA project and going through the DQO process. And they'd never heard of it. No one on the team had, but we really had fun. And it was a great forum for us to. throw out ideas and what we thought the objectives are for this data collection effort. And there were a lot of different ideas. And I just it was really valuable. And so I think just for anyone, if you're not familiar with, systematic planning or the planning process, just to know that these documents are available as a place to start. And to not be intimidated by it, but to use it as kind of a brainstorming session and to think about data quality. I think that's a great resource. So that's my key.
Great. Cheryl, do you want to share?
So, I agree with everything that Jen just said. I think I am also very partial to the planning stage, but I got to tell you, I mean, that because just I think some of the things that the guidance document is able to provide, which is nice, is ways to rethink about how are we connecting the data life cycle and the project life cycle? How are we, re-looking at this or the data dimensions matrix? How can we use this as you can use this as a tool in your own projects and say, what are those dimensions and how am I going to define them? Because as we've kind of gone back and forth throughout this whole thing, that upfront, the planning and able to define it and get it really documented down on paper is so important. So I'm pretty partial to that, but I think there's a ton of other wonderful tools that have come out of it. So I hope you all get good gifts out of it.
Shauna.
Yeah. So I think for me, what I think is really valuable here is these are the documents that I wish existed when I started being a data manager or started in the environmental industry because there just wasn't a lot available to us. And, you might be working in an office and you're the only person, like you're a data manager all alone and trying to figure out some of this information, and you don't know where to start, and there's nobody around that can really help you. And that's what this is meant to be, is it is, a supposed to be a guiding force for you to feel less alone in the world, trying to do your job. And so hopefully you feel that way when you go to these documents and they're helping you answer those questions that, you're trying to find answers for, and that we can all be your kind of, mentor by putting all of our career knowledge into these documents for you to reference for free. So yeah, enjoy.
Thanks.
And so, for me, I think everything everybody has said is great. I think there's a lot of value in these documents, but I think one of the key values is, in fact, the data quality dimensions matrix. The idea of data quality dimensions is not new. It's not something we thought of. You can go out there and find that Lots of people suggest data quality dimensions for various disciplines, and most of them are pretty well aligned with the ones that we have delineated. But what we've generated, what's in these documents, is this matrix that sort of cross-tabulates data quality dimensions with the project life stages. And for each of those, provides some very specific questions, potential measures of data quality. And that's content, frankly, of these documents that I don't think exists anywhere else. So for me, that's a key value item in these documents.
Ryan.
Yeah, without echoing what everyone else said, I guess I would say I've found that these documents are a great place to find wisdom. There's a lot of there's not a lot of specificity in there, and that's intention. There's an intentionality to that, but there just is so much wisdom, and it's important to as data because as data managers, we tend to get sucked into little rabbit holes. We're problem solvers. We our home is in the weeds, as I like to think about it, and it's important to sort of take a deep breath, sort of think about some of the concepts that we try to lay out in these documents. And it's just really helpful to just really help define what is consequential, what is, what fits within your data quality objectives. Is this a rabbit hole I need to run down? And if it is, then there's guidance on how to do it. But sometimes, you just make sure you ask yourself these questions and try to, tap into some of that wisdom. And you find out that no, we don't need to do this, and you can save yourself quite a lot of time. So they are free, but they also contain a lot of value because they can actually save you money by again asking yourself some of these questions beforehand before you go down, like I said, an expensive rabbit hole that you don't necessarily need to. So yes, yeah, they're wonderful. Check them out.
I think my favorite part is so many of us came to the team with environmental science backgrounds, and we sort of found our way to data management. And I think in my experience, there's a lot of people in that situation, and more, there's a lot of people that are coming in with a purely data science background that don't have the environmental perspective. And the cool thing about the documents that we've put together are they're at that intersection of environmental data and data, and that's that sweet spot that we all sort of sit in now is that intersection of the environmental science and the data management, and so it's they provide great perspective in that way. So with that, I don't see any more questions in the Q&A pod. I do want to just thank everyone, all of our panelists for participating today. And thank you, everyone, for attending. With that, Devin, I think I might hand it back over to you to wrap us up.
Yeah, so just some quick logistics here for everybody regarding the feedback form and then following up with questions. We would love to hear back from you today. Also, if you're interested in a certificate of completion, the feedback form is going to be how you obtain one. I am going to put the link in the chat here for everybody to the training page, which houses the feedback form. If you have any issues, feel free to get in touch with us and we are happy to coordinate. If you have any further questions or would like any further clarification on any questions or answers provided during today's training, feel free to reach out at us at ITRC at itrcweb.org. Our trainer's information is also listed on the Clumin training page that I am sending in the chat here right now, and you're welcome to follow up with them as well to get your questions answered. So with that, I will just wish everybody a wonderful rest of their day. And one last final plug to make sure that you register for the next two EDM roundtables that I put in the chat earlier. All right, everybody, thank you very much and have a wonderful day. Trainers, thank you very much. I'll be following up with you after.